The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
To talk about compassion, and do we need to have it a little bit louder? Yeah, so that little bit too loud. That sounds good, right? That's good. Good. Okay. So this evening I'd like to talk about compassion, and it's a big topic. It can be talked about in many different ways. And I want to try to talk about it from the point of view of what's called the sublime abiding of compassion, or the Brahma-vihara of compassion. And the Brahma-viharas, sometimes also known as the divine abidings, are four ways of dwelling, of being, that are usually associated with meditation, because it's something when the mind gets centered or focused on these four states so strongly that they become the primary atmosphere of the heart and the mind, of how we are. And what makes them sublime is that they are, or divine, is that they're four forms of love. And the ability to love, in some ways, is, you know, a nice thing for human beings. And, you know, it can feel quite nice in its way. But most people, even people who are madly in love, they say, you know, so that's mostly what they're thinking about, get distracted regularly by it. They think about it and they're planning how to get to meet the person, and or they're thinking about it and they're thinking about dinner, or, you know, just kind of like mind jumps all over. But when the mind gets concentrated, when the mind gets focused and still, it has the ability to be focused on one thing at a time and in an undistracted way. And this idea of being undistracted is partly what makes meditation quite pleasurable for some people. And when what you're being undistracted from is love, then the experience of love, these four kinds of love, can be quite nourishing, quite healing, can be quite inspiring to feel. To be able to have these four forms of love be kind of saturated, you're feeling saturated with it, they radiate out of your being. Provides a very different conditioning than how, you know, a stressful life conditions the heart and the mind. So the Brahma-viharas, when they were well established, them are meditation states that people enter into. And the idea that you can enter into a meditation state that's characterized by love is quite phenomenal. I had no idea this was possible, and no interest in it whatsoever, until I was meditating quite a bit, and I wasn't looking for these states, but these states arose in me. And that was a surprise. They were quite exquisite, or quite precious to be sitting in a state of love. So these four kinds of love that we can sit in, we can dwell in, that Buddhism champions, one is, usually in English it's called loving kindness, which is a form of goodwill or friendliness, kind of a love, a friendly love. And then there's compassion, and then there's appreciative or sympathetic joy, and where we appreciate other people, appreciate their success and their happiness, and that takes a very powerful form of kind of joy that's kind of that Buddhism will associate with love. And then a form of love called equanimity, equanimous love. And so today I want to talk about the second, which is form that takes compassion. And I want to read to you a description from the ancient texts from the Buddha of how in those ancient texts they talk about someone who's dwelling in this state, undistracted state of compassion. here, one abides pervading the east, eastern direction, with a mind accompanied with compassion. And likewise, the southern direction, the western direction, and the northern direction. So it's kind of like the mind is radiating or imagining that they're feeling that this quality of compassion is spreading outwards in all directions, 360 degrees. Also, that this feeling of compassion is also being pervaded above, below, horizontally, everywhere, and all over the whole world. Do we pervade a mind accompanied with compassion? Extensive, expanded, limitless, free from hatred and ill will. These are meditation states. So they're states that the mind feels quite expansive, spacious. It feels limitless. There's no barriers or boundaries to it. This feels very just open, completely open state. And then I think maybe what's most precious is without any hatred or ill will. And for some people, that's quite something to sit there for an hour at a time and have no aversion towards anything whatsoever and just sit there with a feeling of radiating compassion. It's quite a wonderful thing. And as I mentioned before, it's often considered quite healing. And the thing that it's healing most from, mentioned most in the early text, it heals us from tendencies towards cruelty, towards ill will, towards hatred. Because it says that when the mind is this way, that it's impossible to have any ill will towards other people. No tendencies of wanting to harm or hurt anybody whatsoever. And that's a great thing. We need more of that in the world. People have no inkling of it, wanting to commit harm to others. People who have this in meditation, it's a kind of an exquisite feeling of well-being, of happiness, to have this kind of compassion. And it's some people find it a little bit odd that a state of compassion would be associated with happiness. Because generally, compassion arises when we're in the presence of suffering. Someone is having a challenging time, is troubled in some big way, and the heart is moved to feel tender caring for them or feel a kind of feeling of love where we want their suffering to go away, to be alleviated. And this movement of compassion is a beautiful thing, but it's something that arises in the presence of suffering. Often compassion is held up as a wonderful ideal in Buddhism, and people sometimes have great imaginations of becoming, a great saint filled with beatific compassion and going around smiling and being happy. And it can seem wonderful ideal, but generally it's an ideal that arises when we're encountering what isn't so ideal, that there's suffering in the world. And so how is it that compassion and its encounter with suffering or caring about the suffering of others, can help us feel happy inside for ourselves? And part of the task of this meditation practice and developing this compassion is to learn how to have compassion so there's no cruelty, but more importantly for some people, no distress in relationship to the suffering of the world, but still to care deeply about it and have this kind of, compassionate state. That's kind of the task, because often people feel anxious around suffering or feel distressed or feel alarmed or feel angry about it, and they feel like they want to do something. And in the wanting to do something, it's hard to stay kind of centered in the state of compassion itself. So here's part of my understanding of how it works. And that is that in ancient Buddhist texts, they have at least three or four different words that are the words for compassion. And the one that most people know about is karuna. And that's kind of like the universal word in Buddhism for compassion. But there are other words as well. And one of the important words is anukampa. And what's interesting about how the Buddha used these two words is that karuna was mostly used to describe how you'd feel compassion in a state of meditation. And anukampa was used to describe the compassion you use when you got actively involved in trying to do something about the suffering of the world. So in meditation, you're not doing anything except radiating compassion, feeling compassion. But when you're out and about in the world, you try to do something. You try to help people and act on it. So one is one way of distinguishing these two. One is called simple compassion, or basic compassion, baseline compassion, and the other is active compassion. And so, to understand how to cultivate this simple compassion, it's helpful to realize that it's not the same thing as active compassion, where we're going to act on it. It's going to, you know, initiate. You know, we're going to get involved in what's going on. It's two different forms of compassion. I like to think that the simple compassion is the basic underlying one that gives birth to the active compassion. But if we're able to distinguish between these two, then it can be a lot easier for people to feel simple compassion, because when the focus is on simple compassion, we don't have to get confused with the ideas that, oh, I have to do something, or, you know, that shouldn't be that way, and I'm angry at those people for causing the suffering to the other people, and as you know, it's not okay to sit here and do nothing because I feel this urge. You know, if I'm compassionate, I have to do something. So the idea is, in meditation, you don't do anything. This is a time where we don't have to act on it, and so we can allow ourselves to feel the simple, compassionate wish that they be free of suffering. But we don't have to act on it at that point. Maybe later, if there's wisdom and cause, we should maybe act on it for sure. But to be able to separate these two out can make it easier then to relax back into the simple wish for, you know, the simple desire, the emotion of compassion, the simple compassion. One of the things that modern physiological research has shown is that when there's some kind of clean, simple, or pure compassion operating, meaning that there's no distress, no anxiety around the compassion, no feeling of being alarmed, no hostility towards anything, but just very simple, relaxed compassion, that our physiological system creates oxytocin. And that's the wonderful hormone that nature has, you know, made for human beings so that we'll want to be compassionate, because it makes us feel good. It's kind of a reward system, I suppose. Mothers release oxytocin in their system when they're nursing. And maybe they wouldn't want to nurse as much as they do if it wasn't for the oxytocin. And so it's kind of those feelings of very nice feelings that arise in the body when we're caring for someone. And the first time that I didn't know about oxytocin when this happened to me, but the first time I discovered this simple compassion and how good it can feel was I was on a group hike up in the mountains, desert kind of place, and we were walking in these canyons with big boulders, and we had to kind of climb over these little walls and over these boulders, and there was I was in my mid-30s, so I was pretty fit, and it was relatively easy to climb up some of these things, but there was an older lady who had trouble, but it wasn't like a big trouble, but it was a little bit of a challenge for her, so I stayed behind and walked behind her, and when we came to a place where she could use a little hand, I would help her up. Seemed like an obvious thing to do. And after a while, I kept doing it, not for her sake. But I started feeling really good. Like I was vibrating with this warm, happy, pleasant feeling in my chest. Like, oh, yeah. And like, oh, let's go do some more. And so this idea that you would care for someone, help someone, do something for someone, and it would be, you know, beneficial for yourself, was a surprise to me. And probably some of you know the Dalai Lama goes around the world saying, if you want to be happy, have compassion for others. If you want to be miserable, think only about yourself. So this idea of thinking about others and caring for others is kind of one of the secrets or open secrets for a happy life, a good life. And this idea that, and then I also started discovering these feelings of compassion, as I said earlier, would bubble up in meditation. And I would just sit there in a kind of glow that had this feeling of caring or tender caring or caring for the world. And with this caring feeling came this feeling of pleasure, of warmth, of happiness, of delight, that kind of feels like it was radiating outwards. I didn't feel like I had to do anything in the meditation. I wasn't trying to accomplish anything. I wasn't trying to judge anything. It was just kind of resting in this state. Wonderful thing. They say that people have done some kind of studies of how compassion works for human beings, how it's learned. They have pointed out that you know, there's a theory about different kinds of ways in which people get attached when they're young, healthy kind of bonding that goes on with their parents. And when there's healthy, unhealthy attachment, kind of attachment disorder, haven't been proper attachment, they've experienced abuse or challenges with their parents growing up, maybe in the early ages, that those people tend not to have a lot of compassion when they grow up. But those who have healthy attachment are more access to a compassion. Children who are disciplined through punishment and anger grow up having less compassion than those when they do something they shouldn't do, cause hurt another kid in the, you know, playground. If the adult comes all over to them and tells them you can't do that, but then explains them to it why they can't do it. You know, you hurt someone, how would it be for you if someone came and did that to you? And, you know, kind of had a conversation talking about the logic of it all or something, explain to them. The kids who had this inductive reasoning offered to them as a result of what they've done also grew up to be more inclined to be compassionate than those who are, punished for what they did. So this idea that the conditions that we grew up in can affect our access to compassion. There's something about being closed or being angry or being scared, feeling unsafe, that makes it very hard for the heart to sing, for the heart to kind of radiate. But if we can feel safe, connected, trusting, if we're not stressed out, stressed, then it's easier for the heart to relax and soften and then to radiate. Compassion didn't come to me easily. It was not something that, when I first started doing Buddhist practice that I thought about or cared about or had easy access to. But I thought, kind of meditation is kind of like a tenderizer. For me, I thought that, the hard, crusty heart that I had at an early age started to soften and soften. Or the crust started to break off, the barriers and the armor that I carried with me. And so as I slowly started to thaw, or some of the fear I had, the sense of lack of safety I had, the anxieties I had, began to soften and the heart became more open, then it was like this natural thing that's in there that began to radiate and flow outwards. So simple compassion, the idea that there's two kinds of compassion, at least two kinds, can, for some people, can give them more permission to relax in meditation and discover some degree of caring. For some people, it's discovered most towards themselves, because the person who's suffering that you're most familiar with is yourself. And so sometimes people recoil from suffering and get angry, and sometimes because of that, they're very critical of themselves because they feel like they're suffering, they're inside. But to turn that around and be able to meet oneself with self-care, self-compassion, with kindness, with friendliness, with caring. We care about our suffering. And the importance of caring for ourselves, one of the reasons that's very important is we're trying to change the conditioning that's affecting our hearts or our minds. And we are constantly being shaped by the conditions, the conditioning that we're offering. So if we go around being angry towards ourselves, that's a powerful conditioning where we feel, you know, less safe or we hurt more. But if we're kind to ourselves, that becomes a different conditioning. And it's not something that can operate quickly, but slowly something begins to thaw and to relax. It kind of sets the stage for something else, allows something else to happen. And part of the function of meditation is, in fact, to do a reconditioning of our inner life. Some people, they talk about reparenting. When people grow up without being parented properly and don't feel loved or cared for by other people, it's possible to have that caring and that love well up from the inside and create and kind of penetrate down into the marrow of our bones or into the cells. And so we kind of relearn something that we didn't learn as a child. Again, it's not easy to do because of sometimes the very strong negative self-talk that we have and challenges we have with our inner life. But to begin to kind of meet ourselves, meet our challenges, and begin to discover a caring, to be present for it in a careful, caring way, can be very, very helpful. But it's helpful even if you don't care for yourself. It's possible to develop compassion. And that was my case. When I was a young Buddhist student, I was studying Zen. And they didn't teach anything about being compassionate or kind to yourself. It's just like that was considered to be too saccharine. You know, it's what you do in Hallmark meditation centers. Zen was just like, face the truth, directly. Just sit there and just like a samurai. It was kind of, tough, strong, serious. Zen is serious. It's a good religion. It's a wonderful practice. I benefited a lot from it. But what I'm trying to say is that the practice of Zen was to sit and be present, fully present for the experience you had. And that's all we were told to do. Just be there and be fully present. And so I got to be fully present for a lot of suffering because I suffered a lot. And I was kind of naive. So it didn't occur to me that it was supposed to be any different. There should be any different. That's what I was supposed to do, is sit there and be present. So I just accepted what I was given, which is my suffering, and I just sat there, still, quiet, upright, for hours and days, months, for years, with what happened here. And what happened for me was that by being present in a non-reactive way, without making a story about it, without being critical of it, without being for it, without being against it, just being present, or trying at least to be fully present, that was the art of it, that was the effort to do it, is that all the extra stuff, that baggage I had about my reactivity to it, my self-pity around it, started to fall away. And the simple act of being present was thawing, was part of this tenderizing, was part of kind of something began to give away, relax. Partly because to resist, to be closed, to be resistant, takes a lot of work. It's tiring. And the heart really doesn't want to work so hard. It's exhausted sometimes. So if you sit and just be present for it, we start slowly to give space and time for what's inside of us that's been working and contracted to begin to soften and relax, soften and relax. And so slowly, I began to discover more and more compassion inside of me. At first, because I was so shut off from myself, the way that I started first was operating on me, I didn't recognize it was operating on me, this was happening, but I started recognizing compassionate things in the environment around me. And that person seemed so compassionate, and I'd be drawn to that person. There were certain objects in the world, like some statue that I saw that statue is the embodiment, it's an abstract statue. That's the embodiment of compassion, that statue. And I used to love every day I'd go by and look at that statue because it was compassion. And after many years later, someone told me, no, it's an abstract sculpture of a flame. But somehow I saw this, I said, oh yeah, it is. but I thought it was, compassion. And I used to have, sometimes if the breeze, the wind blew against my cheek, I thought, oh, that's compassion. And then I started drawing, images of statues and art, where there somehow I felt those expressing compassion, and I would copy them from books and photographs and things so I could. And I wasn't so conscious of what I was doing. I just, in retrospect, noticed that I was doing all this. And then in retrospect, after some years, I'd gone to Zen to get enlightened, but that didn't work out. But what happened instead was I got compassionate. And what would you rather do, get enlightened or compassionate? Well, I hope you never have to choose between the two. But it's pretty good to get compassionate. And that changed my life. And so at some point, compassion became the organizing principle of how I live my life and how I direct my life. It became such an important principle for me or kind of reference point for me. So in Buddhism, there is a meditation practice on compassion. And it's a practice of sitting down, and it works best if you already have a meditation practice. You don't have to. It can be, for some people, their first practice, but it's best to have some meditation practice already so you have some capacity to get focused, get centered, to relax, and some ability to kind of be here, and in some modicum of undistractability. And then evoke the image or the idea of memory of some person who has some kind of suffering, we're thinking about them as uncomplicated. So the most uncomplicated person you know who's suffering, most uncomplicated kind of suffering. Because if you think about some really horrendous suffering, it might be challenging for you to be paying attention to it. Or if you think of someone who you have some kind of complicated relationship with, you might be sitting there trying to have compassion for them, and you start thinking, they didn't return the $10 I lend them. How could they? And maybe I won't give them any more money. May they be free of suffering. But those $10. So there's someplace uncomplicated. So you think about them, think about their challenge they have, and then you see if you can have this simple compassion. You're not going to do anything about it at that moment. You're simply going to open your heart and let it be tender, a tender caring for them, as if you're being present, a witness for them, and all that's medicine for them is they know that someone cares. Sometimes just knowing that someone cares is huge for people. And so you're just going to sit there caring for them, that kind of caring. Uncomplicated by the need to do anything. And then it's repeating a phrase, so it's kind of like the focusing on this repeated phrase as part of the focus on this, working, staying concentrated. And the simple phrase is, may you be free of your suffering. May you be free of your troubles. And in saying the phrase in a very soft, quiet way, the idea is kind of like water, you're watering the heart, watering this caring, this tender caring, and staying in touch with it. The mind wanders off and you come back and you touch into it. And you touch into this idea, the wish you have, the intention you have, the aspiration you have. It would be really nice if this person didn't have it. I really wish the person wasn't suffering. And seeing if you can find a way to touch into a simple compassion, simple tender caring. As this tender, simple compassion can arise in meditation, as we begin familiar with it, then it becomes a stronger and stronger foundation for this active compassion, the anukampa. And when the Buddha talked about going out, Buddha talked a fair amount about going out and living for the welfare and happiness of other people, living a life that supports and helps others. And he said, do it from anukampa rather than from karuna. Do it out of this active compassion, this active caring. But it's easier to do that if you're centered in the simple compassion, where you know how to be compassionate without the complications of all the other emotions we can have about what's happening in the world. And then perhaps when we have active compassion, it can be very passionate, it can be very forceful, very engaged, but maybe there's a fair chance that we don't get pulled along by anger, by being alarmed, by being distressed, by being afraid, but we can stay grounded in a compassion in the face of tremendous challenges that go on. And I think this is a gift to our society. There's no shortage of tremendous suffering in our society, in our world. In our neighborhoods, you know, there's all kinds of challenges that people have. There's social challenges, there's great fault lines in American society, a tremendous violence and hostility and prejudice that goes between people here. There's people who have run into life tragedies of sickness, old age, and death in ways that are quite sorrowful. There's all kinds of ways in which people are suffering. And we could become the medicine. We can become the medicine if we care. And we become the medicine if not only do we care, but we have the inner freedom and ability to be responsive, to rise to the occasion and be able to offer something to the world that comes out of our compassion. Perhaps they're sometimes simple acts, sometimes maybe they're great acts. But to prepare ourselves so that we're ready. Who knows when you're going to be asked to respond to the world, for your neighbor, for a stranger, for family members and friends, for our society as a whole. Who knows when you're going to be asked, when that comes your way, and it's obvious that it's time for you to respond. And if you're prepared with compassion, prepared with an open heart, prepared in a way that you know how to respond with clean compassion, with centered on compassion, it's a great thing we can do for each other. So Buddhism has these four forms of love. Each of them can be cultivated and developed. We don't have to leave love to chance and just hope that it comes along at the right time. We can reflect on it, think about it, cultivate it, develop it, and make it something that becomes a strength. The Buddha called it it can become a wealth. And it's kind of an inner wealth. And what's nice about the wealth of love, wealth of compassion, it's portable. And it's if it's really strong in you, it's kind of hard for someone to steal it. But they don't have to steal it because you're ready to offer it. Here, you can have it. All my compassion. I'm ready to support you and help you. So we have about 10 minutes. Do you have any questions about this topic that you'd like to ask, or any comments about it, or any testimonials about compassion and how it has worked for you in your life?
Hi, I'm trying to understand the difference between compassion and empathy, and I was just thinking about empathy recently and a definition by Brené Brown, where empathy is like you're going down in there with the person, you're feeling their feelings, and compassion, it sounds like it's a tenderness. But if you were also feeling all their feelings, then you'd be feeling all their distress and all the stuff that would contribute to burnout. So am I on the right track there?
I don't know. I actually had a conversation with someone today about this topic and about empathy. And I think she got first a teeny bit upset with me because I said it's a semantic issue here we're talking about. But then I tried to explain myself, and then I think she relaxed. There are, let's avoid the word empathy for a moment and what it actually means. It might be useful to distinguish two different responses to other people's state that they're in. We can be in the presence of someone else's, if we're talking about compassion today, so someone else's suffering, and kind of feel how painful it is for them. And in doing so, we feel almost like we feel the pain ourselves. And I think people often have this with physical pain. If we watch someone, suddenly get injured in a physical, painful way, I've sometimes kind of just, my whole body kind of recoiled. It's almost like I feel like a tight and contracted because it's, there's almost like these mirror neurons. It's like the chalk on the chalkboard. It's involuntary. It's, And it was very unfortunate. I went to a restaurant with my family some weeks ago, and they had a sports channel up on the TV, on the wall, and they were showing some kind of, like from some foreign country, some awful kind of all-out wrestling, boxing, kickboxing. And, it was blood everywhere, and what they were doing to each other, I was like, it was just awful to watch. I stopped after a while. But, so that, there's that kind of way. You can really feel, and you kind of, then there's another thing where you really feel what someone else, you kind of recognize, or there's some part of you recognizes or feels what's happening with someone else, but we don't identify it with it that strongly. We don't become it that strongly. There's a feeling of, yes, I kind of a physical felt sense that tells me something where I kind of know what they're what's happening to them. I really know it, but it's not happening to me. I'm free of it. I'm not identified with it. I'm not caught in it. It's almost like there's a strong observer that can watch it being experienced in their own body, but we're relaxed, we're not contracted, nothing goes on. Does that distinction make some sense? Which of those is empathy? The first one. Yeah? It's like that opinion carries the day? Robert's not allowed to say it yet. he is, that's his profession, is to have an answer to this question. So who else thinks? Which of those two? So right now, yes? The first one?
Number one.
Yeah. Number two?
The first one might be sympathy.
So there's a mic right behind you. Why don't you tell us the
So, is this on?
Yeah.
Okay. So the way that I understand it is that social science would say that what you just described as understanding what another person might be feeling would be called cognitive empathy.
Uh-huh.
So we understand, but we don't necessarily feel. The second kind is affective empathy, which is the ability to imagine we can feel what someone else is feeling, and then have the willingness to actually feel it, and that's when mirror neurons are activated. Compassion is the wish to alleviate the suffering. So an easy way to know the difference between empathy and compassion is that empathy is a response not just to suffering. So I can empathize with you when you're happy, right? But compassion is always and only a response to suffering. So,
which of those two kinds of empathy is a source for compassion, or compassion a whole different thing?
So,
compassion without empathy.
Again, it's social. I'm giving you a social science definition. The first two are cognitive and affective, and those compassion always includes empathy. So there's four aspects to compassion, and the first two are empathy. So without empathy, we can't be compassionate. Yeah. But when we block empathy, we block the flowering of compassion because we don't allow our heart to open.
Right.
So this happens when people shut down. Lots of first responders and medical people will shut down as a way of protecting themselves. And so they sort of block their empathetic response.
Right.
Is that...
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
I still don't understand. I mean, what you're saying is very nice, very, very clear. But
all right.
So the issue around empathy is that in a layperson's vocabulary, empathy means to feel what someone else is feeling.
Correct.
So if I'm suffering, and you feel my suffering, now we have two people who are suffering. Great. You know, that doesn't seem very good. So when we say we have empathy and we're feeling someone else's suffering, I think it's usually nuanced. It doesn't mean that you're fully feeling what they're feeling. You're feeling it in some way, but you're feeling that person suffering without you suffering, even though you're feeling the suffering.
For empathy, is that?
If there's empathy for someone suffering, and there's affective empathy you talked about.
So how
can we have affective empathy of someone suffering and not suffer ourselves?
The way that the mirror neurons work, if I've understood it correctly, is that they activate a response in our brain that makes us think we're having that experience that we're witnessing. So it makes us think that we can feel all the blood and gore that was happening on the screen.
So now we have two people suffering, you and me.
Well, so that's where empathy has to be brought into balance. Because when it gets out of balance, what happens is that people will shut down as a way to protect themselves, right, which is just what you said. You stopped looking at it. So if you continued looking at it and spilled over into actually tremendous distress, then it would be referred to as empathetic distress.
I see.
And people confuse this with compassion collapse or compassion fatigue, because what's actually happening is that empathy gets out of balance, and because it gets out of balance, we can't really develop compassion, according to social science.
Nice.
And in my personal experience as a practitioner, I think that it bears out. When I go over the cliff, there's no more compassion, because it's all about me and my suffering.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So I guess I have the experience of feeling someone else's suffering in a sense. But the sense of being mindful and being stable within myself is so strong that I don't identify with it. It's almost like it's just a piece of a much bigger room. It's like a little thing, something. So it's felt clearly and fully and intimately, But the mindfulness, the awareness is so strong and so free, in a sense, there's no identification.
Right.
So for me, that would, I kind of like to call that empathy. But this is all semantic, right? Because the idea of feeling someone suffering so strongly that now you're suffering too, that doesn't seem to be useful. I wouldn't want that kind of, I almost want to, I think empathy is such a beautiful word that I want a different word.
Well, also, I'll just finish. This would be my last comment, yeah. But without mindfulness, without the stability that comes from mindfulness to be able to see what's actually happening, we will tip into empathic distress, and we will not be able to develop compassion, because compassion requires that we be able to recognize and stay with suffering.
Great.
The way I understand it.
Yeah, nice. So, thank you, Robert. Robert is teaches compassion, teaches people, trains people in becoming compassionate. So it's a, you know, I have a lot of respect for what Robert has studied and learned and what he does.
I don't actually teach people how to be compassionate, but how to cultivate it.
How to cultivate it. Yeah, so we're over time, but I'm happy to stay up here if you want to talk to me, those of you. Some of you have raised your hands and we haven't had a chance, so I'll stay here. And I hope this evening has given you something to think about that helps you feel about. May you feel and think about compassion for the next week. Thank you.